Basic Brewing Radio is sponsored in part by the American Homebrewers Association. Give or receive an American Homebrewers Association membership by December 31st and select a free brewing book of your choice. This holiday season, purchase a one-year membership and choose from 60 different beer and brewing books to meet your goals. Visit homebrewersassociation.org/basicbrewing for offer details. Hurry, hurry, hurry. This offer ends December 31st. That's homebrewersassociation.org/basicbrewing. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, December 28th, 2023. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, it's the annual Brewing Disasters Show. Homebrewers from around the world share their tales of brewing gone wrong. Steve Wilkes joins me to react to the carnage and sample some special show beers from homebrewer Scott Housel. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And many thanks to everybody who is helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. I hope you all had a great Christmas if you celebrated it. I have successfully navigated the technical challenges of producing our special bonus DVD commentary video. That's the one where Steve and I watch our Introduction to Extract Homebrewing DVD. That's our original DVD. And give our comments, our memories, and our reflections of shooting that video, that DVD almost two decades ago. Financial supporters and participants in this disaster show will get a link to that later this week. The general public will get to see it probably in July. Lots of show to get to this week, but I want to remind you of this special 10% discount on beer ingredients from our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave of HighGravityBrew.com. Desiree has created a discount code just for listeners of this podcast. If you go to HighGravityBrew.com and use the code BB10, that's BB10 at checkout, you'll receive 10% off anything listed under the beer ingredients menu on HighGravityBrew.com. It can be used every time you order. There's not a limit of number of times it can be used. However, it can't be combined with other offers. So save 10% off beer ingredients, including the Build Your Own Beer page, beer ingredient kits, grain, hops, yeast, adjuncts, everything under the beer ingredients menu. Just remember the code BB10. That's two better than BB8. And if you forget the code, click on the High Gravity ad on the right-hand side of basicbrewing.com, and it will be added to your session automatically. 10% off beer ingredients by using the code BB10. That's BB10 on family-owned and operated HighGravityBrew.com. That's HighGravityBrew.com. That's quite a deal. I went back into the archives and figured out our first disaster show was way back in 2011. So this makes it a round dozen of shows. We always look forward to getting your letters, and you always come through. Before you get started with listening to the big old long show, find the Disaster Show bingo card in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com or in the Basic Brewing bio on Instagram or on Threads at Basic Brewing. Print that sucker out. Fill out your card. Line yourself up some tasty homebrew and buckle up. Here we go. Steve Wilkes, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James. It's good to be back.
It's the annual disaster show. Can you believe it?
Well, I believe it. I just, it's how many years has this been? Like 18 or I don't know.
Of the disaster show?
I don't know. Yeah, the disaster show.
I don't know. I'll have to go back and look at the archives to see how long we've been doing this. For the past like 5 years, or maybe this is the fifth year, our good buddy down in Florida, homebrewer Scott Housel, has sent us beers to taste during the show. And he sent us so many beers this year that last week, as people are listening to this, we tasted Scott's five variations on a Saison that you have in your possession. And I don't know if you've tried those yet, but I would share those with your son Chase because they are wonderful, those beers.
I've had two of them.
And then I've still got however many I've got, you know, two or three left. And yeah, we'll definitely be sharing those. I have one of the Rye Saison, boy, really good.
Yeah, that's the base beer.
Yeah.
There are two versions of that. One is bottle conditioned and one is keg fill. I was really happy. I was going to say, if you weren't going to drink those, I would buy them off of you because I like
no,
them.
They won't. They won't last.
And the artwork is worth turning us into Muppets. Yeah. But we have three of Scott's beers, and then we have a well-aged surprise at the end of the show. If we can make it through the end of the show.
That's me.
You're a well-aged surprise.
And if I can make it to the end of the show.
So why don't we start with a beer?
Right.
This is the first one from Scott. This is called Up the Down Escalator. It says on the label, Coconut Cardamom Ale at 8.5%. Oh, my gosh. I neglected to see that part. But here we have a description from Scott of this beer.
This one is called Up the Down Escalator, named after a song from the 80s by the Chameleons UK. I called it that because I had a hard time figuring out exactly how much cardamom and coconut to add. And finally, one day, I got it right. And consider it a seasonal ale inspired by chai flavors. Cheers.
Cheers.
Yeah.
I poured it, and it's a, what would you say that, a copper color? Sort of a slightly darker copper color?
Oh, that's beautiful, yeah. It's very coppery. Copper to little hints of red. And
it smells really good.
It's a delicious beer. The cardamom is lovely in it. Well, so is the coconut, for that matter. They both come through. The balance is very nice.
Mm. You wouldn't think it was 8.5%. The spices really lighten it up and make it very refreshing.
Yeah, it's got that chai thing going pretty good.
Yeah.
That's good.
That is really good.
It finishes a little sweet. That coconut really, you know, you almost get this little hint of like a coconut cream pie or something.
Mm. It's like Marianne was here.
That's true. That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of obscure references, we have our disaster show bingo card, mm-hmm. And if you haven't already, find it. I'll put a link to the PDF in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com. I'll also put a link in the Basic Brewing Instagram bio is how you do that, and then I'll also link to it on Threads. But every year we have this bingo card, and what it is a blank 16-block grid, and then there are 20 categories that you can put into the grid. And shall we go over the categories? Number one is angry spouse.
Yep.
Number two is blood.
Blood.
Number three is beer/wort/spill/spray. Number four is broken glass.
Yep.
Number five, foreign object in beer. Number six, tipsy brewer. Number seven, bad pun from host, which is, that should be a free space. Number eight, award won. So if you had a disaster, but the beer won an award anyway. Number nine, beer dumped. Number 10, late night. Number 11, leaky keg. Number 12, fire. Number 13, secret repairs, so that if you broke something and then you're hiding it from somebody else that you broke it and you fixed it.
Uh-huh.
Number 14, obscure host reference. We've already had that, so mark that off. Number 15, weird ingredient. Number 16, brewing upgrade, so if your disaster led to you getting better equipment. Number 17, stuck sparge. Number 18, bottle bomb. Number 19, helpful spouse. In number 20, ruined floor/furniture. And we've had each one of those on the show in the past.
Yes, we have.
And I'm not going to spoil, you know, I've read all the letters, obviously, beforehand. But, you know, just like regular bingo, you know, four in a row across, you know, or vertically or in a diagonal shape. Right. So
I filled out my card.
Okay. All right. This will be fun. I got an email to start off before the disasters. This could be a disaster in a way. This is from Ian in Selbridge County, Kildare, Ireland, who you remember Spotify, you know, a couple of weeks ago was running all these, you know, stats. I guess if you subscribe to Spotify, gave you all these stats of things that you listened to over the past year. Uh-huh. Well, apparently Ian listened to Basic Brewing Radio for a total of 29,894 minutes.
Good Lord.
That's four. I divided that by 60, and that's 498.24 hours, which if you divide that by 16, so, you know, if you're like awake 16 hours a day, essentially, that's 31 waking days that Ian has spent a whole month.
Goodness, that's what is that in Scaramucci's?
I don't know.
So 1.5 Scaramucci's.
Mark that obscure reference box again. I replied to Ian, and he said it did seem unusually high to me. When I think about it, I normally put a podcast on before going to bed. Some nights, I unfortunately forget to turn it off before falling asleep. Spotify will continue rolling on to the next episode if you let it, so I imagine a few nights it was playing on my earphones all night.
So he learned by osmosis.
That's right. We can program him, you know, in his sleep.
You know, if you'd put this out in Spanish, you could really kill two birds with one stone.
Necesito practicar más mi español.
Mi español.
No puedo hablar bien. Yeah.
What are you, like, German Spanish now?
Yeah, I'm gonna stop before I get in trouble.
Something, yeah.
Okay, the first. Well,
this coconut cardamom ale is delish.
Okay.
I like cardamom. Cardamom is one of those spices you don't think about very often, at least not, you know, not around these parts.
I have a cardamom sweater.
I love cardamom. That's right. I love
this cardigan. Yeah, that's pretty good. Mm. Oh, I have to read.
Do we have our first letter?
We have our first.
I don't have any to read today. Our I don't first have anything to read.
Letter. You're just color commentary.
Oh, so, I'm just color. Okay.
Orange.
I got to do
purple.
Am I going to do power rankings on these beers? Kind of like the football thing.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
What a maroon. Power ranking. That's another color. Okay. First, Jared E. from Central New Jersey. Jared says the annual Basic Brewing Disaster Show is the podcasting highlight of my year. Now, for better or worse, I finally get to contribute. It all began when I decided to brew my first lager under pressure.
There you go.
Brew day went smoothly, and I racked the chiller wort into a corny keg, which I was using as my fermenter. From there, I attached a jumper to the serving keg, which would be naturally purged by the CO2 produced during fermentation, and put on my Spunding valve.
Uh-oh.
That should be a square.
That should be a square. Why isn't Spunding valve a square?
It should be. Maybe next year.
We don't have a square to spare. I cannot spare a square. I'm sorry.
That's number 14, obscure host reference. Jared says, 1 week later, I decided to take my first gravity check. My wife was running errands, and I was supposed to be doing housework while she was away, but I figured there'd be no harm in squeezing in a quick gravity check.
Well, that depends. Depends if you have any depends.
It would only take a minute, right? Wrong.
Wrong.
Once I started removing the quick disconnects from the purged serving keg, I heard a loud hissing sound and then got a face full of beer. Okay, that's number 3, beer/wort spilled / spray. Quickly stepping back, I then see a beer shower going up to the ceiling. I promptly throw my hand over the keg in an effort to stop the shower, but only end up directing the shower horizontally, ensuring a more even distribution of the beer across my brew room. Throwing the quick disconnect back onto the post, I stopped the shower and bought myself a minute to think about what to do next. I determined the liquid post must have had a bad poppet, and I needed to replace it.
You know, I hate it when I get a bad poppet.
That's David Attenborough after dark. Bad poppet. Thankfully, I had an extra post on hand from a spare keg. I put a rag over the post to contain the inevitable second round of beer shower, released the pressure, and swapped the posts. After quickly wiping down the most obvious beer stains from across the brew room, I frantically ran back upstairs to resume my housework before my wife returned home. The following week, after performing a cold crash, I returned to my fermenter to add the gelatin finings. My wife was out of the house again, but this time I was in charge of watching our two-month-old son. Oh, my. Remembering the mess I'd made the prior week, I sat him down about 10 feet away.
And wait a minute. I got to stop you here. If this is going to lead to child services.
No. Wait. I scan these, you know, I screen these letters.
Okay.
I sat the two-month-old about 10 feet away outside of what I deemed to be the potential splash zone. Since this was my first time adding finings under pressure, I decided it would be wise to bring my computer and watch a how-to video, hoping a proper training could avert another mess. Wrong again. I added my gelatin finings to a PET bottle, pressurized it with CO2, and then attached a jumper to connect it to the liquid post of the cold crashed keg. Apparently, I didn't tighten the plastic post on my PET bottle well enough because it suddenly developed a leak and a gelatin mixture started shooting out across the brew room. Although my son may have been outside the splash zone, my laptop was not.
Oh, no.
Eventually, I was able to fix the leak, add the finings, and clean up the mess. In the end, the beer turned out fine. And now I get to type out this disaster story to you on a brand new plug-in keyboard because the gelatin shower had destroyed the original keyboard on my laptop. Oh well, I have a new respect for fermenting lagers under pressure. Thanks, Jared. Oh my. So new, well, does that count as, that's not, well, it's ruined, well, it's not furniture. I don't know. Leaky keg, though, for sure.
Yeah.
Leaky keg goes hand in hand with the beer / wort spill / spray, I think.
Oh, goodness. I don't have leaky keg. Isn't leaky keg a pub in, like, Hogwarts? We've got to go to the leaky keg.
The beer keg in Fayetteville is that little place that closed here.
Oh, I know, yeah.
Past a year. Leaky keg is number 11. Okay, letter number two, and forgive me, this is from Copenhagen, Denmark, so I'm gonna mispronounce lots of things. This is from, Asger, A-S-G-E-R. I'm going to pronounce it Asger. Dear James and Steve, I'm writing to you from Copenhagen, Denmark, and I am happy to finally say thank you for all the tips, tricks, and recommendations you have given me through the years. Well, you're welcome. I found your YouTube channel almost immediately, and there's no doubt that my brewing is all the better for it. Excellent.
That's good.
Through the years, I've had a few beers fail, but nothing more serious than having to empty some bottles and start over. However, the first disaster story comes with a Christmas theme. Oh, need little jingle bells in the background.
Yep.
Do you have your drum kit nearby? Do you have your jingle bells?
Hang on.
We have a percussionist.
How's that?
Yes, great. We have a percussionist on hand. I have a special sound effect that I'll throw in at the proper time. I want it to be a surprise, though. In Denmark, we have a special low ABV beer called Hvidtold. Hvidtol. I'm going to say Hvidtol translates to white beer, and despite the name, it's a dark, sweet beer. Of course it is.
Oh, naturally.
Because of this, it's often referred to as Nisale or elf beer. My dear wife, who actually bought me my first brewing kettle and got me started in the hobby, isn't much of a beer drinker. Hey, I'd say that's 19, helpful spouse.
Yep.
She does, however, drink Hvitdal, so 1 year for Christmas, my brother-in-law and I decided to give it a shot. Now, finding a reliable recipe is kind of hard since the main malt, Hvitmalt, or white malt, you have to use normally isn't sold in brewing shops. My brother-in-law found an alternative recipe using rye malt and other interesting malts. The target, like most low ABV beers, was to have a low original gravity and a rather high final gravity, and we succeeded in both. Two important details here. This was back when I still didn't have any way of controlling my fermentation temperature other than putting the fermenter in the shed, and I was still bottling my beers. Foreshadowing. Everything on the brewing day went fine, and the fermentation was fine, too. The fermentation finished a bit higher than it was supposed to, but that can't hurt anything, right? More foreshadowing. Well, you be the judge of that. Back then, when bottling, we would also rack into a bottling bucket where we would mix it with the priming sugar. When we did that with this batch, we got a surge of foam forming. It almost left the bucket. That was a new experience. We both thought it looked funny, but didn't have any doubts about what it would mean for our beer, so we cracked on and bottled all 17 liters. After bottling the beer was left to mature in the shed, and soon enough we were ready to try them. We saw from the beginning that we had an issue, in quotation marks. Most of the beers were to be opened over the sink and poured rapidly. The beers tasted fine, according to the missus. But since she might drink a third of a liter in an evening, our batch would last a long time. The culmination of this disaster comes after New Year's. One Friday evening, we visited my brother-in-law, and my wife and sister had one of our Hvitdal, and as usual, it was poured over the sink. This time with a rather big pop when opening. It sounded like a TV ad champagne bottle opening. Everyone laughed and made jokes. The next day, however, no one was laughing. During the night, my brother-in-law was woken by a loud noise, sounding a bit like an explosion. He went to the kitchen to investigate, but found nothing, and so went back to bed. It wasn't until they all got up that they realized the bottle of Hvitdal they had left on the countertop was missing. The bottle had been completely pulverized in the explosion, and the only thing they could find was a piece of the neck with the cap on. Well, that sounds like a bad... All they could find was a piece of the neck with the cap on. It also left a dent in the ceiling of their new kitchen. It now reminds me not to bottle too many beers. Steve can say what he wants about kegging, but I've never heard of a home brewer making a keg bomb.
Well, if you do, you'll never forget it.
No, for sure. Number 18. Number 18. Yeah, number 18's bottle bomb. Bottle bomb. Boy, yeah, when the bottle just disappears, you know, thank goodness nobody was around.
It's like a Mel Gibson movie.
It sounds like a ghost story. All they found was a piece of the neck and the cap. And from then on, that night, it's a campfire story. Oh, we had sort of a little brewing disaster a couple months ago. I brought a keg of my porter over to your house for Chase and Sydney's wedding reception. And I was showing you how to hook up the keg, and what do you remember what happened? What happened?
Well, we put the gas. I think I put the gas side on the liquid side, and it didn't want to come off.
No. You know, it's the old gray for gas and black for beer thing. We forgot that, and We put the thing. The thing like had a hard time getting on there. We were like pushing it on, and there was uh oh,
yeah,
that's the wrong one.
But we got it off okay. All was okay.
Eventually, using some channel locks and pulleys, and the beer went well.
It was great. My brother-in-law loved it. That should be in, that should be a category in the relatives who love your beer.
His catchphrase is that enough beer?
Is that, are we going to run out?
If you're around, we will. This is a repeat offender. Letter number three is a repeat offender. This is Guillaume from Montreal.
This is a very international show.
Yes, which is why we don't ship things anymore.
That's right.
The reason that we don't ship prizes anymore is like, man, it got expensive real quick. Oh, and I got to say that if I'm having trouble with it right now, but if I'm able to export the video and get everything working, Steve and I sat down and did a DVD commentary on our first Introduction to Extract Home Brewing DVD.
Yep.
And that was an experience. On the screen, you see the effects of the ravages of time.
Yes.
Because you see us from 20 years ago and then us in the present day. You look a lot more similar than I do to my past self.
I'm not sure if that's a compliment to my current self or a disparaging remark on what I looked like 20 years ago. You looked as bad then as you do now.
You've looked old forever.
That's right. God, you were old back then.
This is from Guillaume. Hope you're doing well, and that I'm not too late for this year's disaster show deadline. Well, obviously you're not. I've already written for this disaster show, and unfortunately I have to do it again. I was the one responsible for the geyser mead, adding my yeast nutrients and then mixing, resulting in a few gallons of must all over the floor. My story this year is also, unfortunately, in the same category. We don't learn, do we? I made a nice mead this spring, my second after the geyser one. It turned well and tasteful with raspberry and wildflower honey with added cranberries. Wow. It sounds like a Christmas thing, something for Christmas.
It's very holiday-ish.
Christmas. It's your cue, drummer.
What? Oh, but you should have said bells.
When I say the holidays are Christmas, that's your cue. Okay.
Okay. And also, I've got a red kettle over here I'm standing in front of in case you want to dump some change into it.
I thought you meant a kettle drum.
No, it's kettle corn.
There's plenty of corn in this show, I tell you. Okay, after that mead was kegged, my next batch was a red ale. Brewing day went just fine, mashing it up just right, hitting my temperature and targets for the day. I chilled the wort, transferring into my fermenter. Fermentation went superb, as usual. I was able to hit my target final gravity, and everything seemed to go as planned. Managed to keg the beer, as I usually do, and put the keg in the kegerator. I have one of those pre-made kegerators that are half-sized refrigerators that come with a beer tower on top. That's pretty much what I have. The ball lock kegs that I use fit in just fine, but it's a little tight vertically speaking, leaving about 5 to 10 centimeters of overhead. If I have to work properly on the kegs, I have to take them out, but sometimes if I feel lazy, I'll just try to work with the kegs in place. Anyway, back to the red ale. I carbonated it for a week and was curious to taste it, of course. I disconnected the liquid outpost without taking the keg out from the keg and back to taste one. Tasted it, wonderful, another success. I managed to yank out the LOP, liquid outpost, from the red ale and back to the nearly finished keg in the back. I go away for a minute and come back to this hissing sound. Could it be the fridge compressor, CO2 leaking, an elf locked in the fridge? It's kind of a Christmas reference. Just seeing if you're awake. I opened the kegerator only to find some red liquids all over the place. How can my keg leak? It's disconnected. Apparently, the liquid outpost can get stuck in a not closed, not open state, like diagonally. So the pressure in the keg was pushing it out by the LOP in a tiny geyser. Pardon me. In reference to my other major disaster, I had, consistency. In hindsight, I should have pulled the pressure release valve to end this, but at this point, I didn't really realize what was going on and didn't think this one through. To visualize the problem, I took the leaking keg out of the kegerator, saw the LOP jammed crosswise, rushed to get a connector for it, only for it not to connect properly. I finally managed to get it sitting properly again, closing the leak for good. But you might have guessed it, beer was everywhere. Not so much in quantity, but the kegerator is in my finished basement next to my couch, curtains, bookshelves, etc. I was alone in the house, so I had time to clean before the family would come back. Okay, that's... would that count as secret repairs? I don't know.
Yes, it would. So I'm going with... I've got 11. I've got leaky keg out of this.
Yeah. Number three, and beer wort spill spray.
Yeah. You know, angry spouse has got to be there somewhere.
Let's see.
Because there's a ruined couch in there, I'm pretty sure.
I cleaned the walls, floor, ceiling, frames, light fixtures, etc. like a madman, not to get caught this time. So all in all, the beer was delicious. Nobody knows what happened to this day, and my reputation is unharmed. So no angry spouse. Oh, okay. So you cannot check the angry spouse on your bingo cards? I swear I forgot that was there. Guillaume knows us too well. There you have it. The geyser guy strikes again. Thank you, James, for reading my disaster story. It's always a fun show to hear, comforting me in knowing that I'm not the only one doing stupid stuff with my hobby. I swear I didn't know that he was going to refer to the angry spouse. But how could you not?
How could you not? Yeah.
I've got a sticky poppet or whatever the one of my kegs. When I pressurize the keg, I got to make sure that I put the picnic tap on there.
Get some of those disinfectant wipes for your sticky poppet. Now they'll make your skin a little rough.
Wasn't that a character on Seinfeld? Sticky poppet.
Sticky poppet. Yeah.
He was on the couch.
That's right.
Poppet. Letter number four. This is from Steve. It's not you, right?
Not me.
Okay. Firstly, I
have a disaster show. I have a disaster show story.
Okay. Well, when we open the next beer, you can tell it so that I can take some sips. I'm behind. Okay. All right. Steve says, firstly, I would like to say I really enjoy the podcast. Oh, thank you. It's really helped me during my brewing journey. I hope.
I figured journey was.
God bless us, everyone.
Yeah. I'm just going to start doing that every now and then.
Yeah, all right. Just to show you're awake.
Yeah.
Firstly, a little background. I'm a home brewer from Newcastle upon Tyne.
Oh.
In the northeast of England.
There's a parrot on the telly.
The Lodge. I'm also a very keen rugby union supporter, having played when I was a lot younger and now supporting my local team, Newcastle Falcons, and my national team, England.
I love it.
I don't know, just imitating rugby crowds. I watched rugby this past year. There was a Facebook friend of mine was competing in a rugby thingy somewhere else, and it was live streamed, and I watched it. I didn't understand anything. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun to watch, but I was completely clueless. As opposed to watching American football, where
you still know next to nothing.
Yeah, I can tell what's going on, though.
You can tell what's going on, yeah.
I just watch to see how my wife reacts, and then, you know.
Then you know what to do.
Yeah, exactly. I hate it when I cheer for the wrong team. Ooh, good catch. Oh, no, bad. Oh, ooh. Bad. Okay. I'm not that bad. Steve says, I've been brewing for approximately 6 or 7 years, and after the penny dropped that I should predominantly make beer that I liked, as I'm the main beer drinker in my house, therefore, I have, over the last year or two, tried to concentrate on the 5 or 6 styles that I really like, the main effort being a pale ale, which brings me to my disaster. The Rugby World Cup, which, for people don't know, is the most important tourney for rugby nations played every 4 years and occurred during the autumn of 2023. The previous tournament had resulted in the final, which included England, who were soundly beaten by a South African team. Also, the England team, since their World Cup, final defeat has generally been absolutely awful, so hopes were not high for this year's competition. back to the brewing. This is kind of a ping pong match, just or table tennis. Can you say ping pong still? I don't know. Back to the brewing. As I knew that I would be overdosing on rugby watching, I also knew that an adequate supply of beer would be needed. I am by no means an expert beer brewer, but I generally manage to muddle through and get a quite reasonable product at the end. So it's my goal every day, getting a reasonable product in the end. So in the or from the end. So in October, I brewed the 10th iteration of my pale ale. Brew day went fine. I fermented with Kvike and dry hopped as normal. I then kegged the beer and let it condition for 2 weeks as I normally do. So at the risk of tempting fate, foreshadowing, whilst having made numerous mistakes, I've never made or had a true disaster. Back to the rugby. After a few scares, England progressing well in the World Cup and qualified for the semifinals, which were to be played on the 21st of October this year. Guess who the opponents were? Yes, South Africa. So I thought I would watch.
I was going to say Detroit.
Second guess. So I thought I would watch while trying the first couple pints of my new and freshly brewed pale ale. I have put the keg to cool in serving temperature and to fully carbonate into the keyser the week before, only connecting up the gas post. This is my usual procedure. A few minutes before the game kicked off, I connected up the beer outpost, drained off a pint, and then proceeded to pour myself a pint to drink. Now back to the rugby. South Africa were very heavy favorites for this game, and England were expected to be hammered, as will Steve be with his paleo. So I've sat in front of the television, and I've started to watch. I'm also congratulating myself. This was definitely the best pale ale and perhaps the best beer I'd ever brewed.
Wow.
The match was really good, and England were rattling the South Africans who were leading. Would we win? The beer slipped down well, and as halftime, I went to the keyser to pull another pint. I was really looking forward to this. I opened the top, and nothing came out. I was a bit confused, but as I was in a rush, I pulled another pint of a different beer, thinking that this was the second pour, and maybe that some hop debris or something had blocked the beer out tube. So I went back and watched the match. As the match finished quite late into the evening, I didn't get round to shifting all the rubbish from the top of the keyser and checking the keg. The next morning, I got up and after breakfast went to open the keyser and clear the blocked tube. Upon opening the keyser, I was greeted with the lovely hoppy aroma of my pale ale. I then looked outside. I was greeted by the sight of a sea of beer. I then felt the weight of the keg. It was obviously empty. I forgot to add, this was my 65th brew. I had never seen anything like it. So I pulled the now empty keg of pale ale and the keg of another beer out of the keyser and spent 2 hours draining and cleaning the sticky mess up. Having done so, I checked the keg looking for the cause. I found that the O-ring on the beer outpost was split. I remembered that I had not checked the posts when I sanitized the keg, as I normally do. It would appear the beer had just merrily flowed out. Merrily.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was kind of a Christmas reference.
Oh, sorry.
Merrily flowed out whilst I was watching the game. The moral of this story is check all O-rings properly. The cost of replacement worked out as 25 pence or 30 cents, and I have a pack of 10 in my spares box. This worked out to be the most expensive pint of beer I had ever brewed. Oh, and England lost by 1 point. Oh, poor Steve.
Well, so see, now, if we go back to the previous disaster letter where we had the bottle bombs and I was and the author said something about how tell Steve that no matter what, a keg can't be a bottle. You never heard of a bottle keg or a keg bomb
exploding.
Exploding, but you still get a. Here's a bad O-ring,
and then we had a bad poppet before,
and a bad poppet, a sticky poppet,
sticky poppet, and split O-ring.
What's the deal with a sticky poppet? I know I don't.
If you go back in the in YouTube, they still have old videos from sticky poppet and split O-ring,
sticky poppet and split O-ring. Weren't they on In Living Color? really liked their stuff in the early 90s.
Okay, this is the last letter before we get to try another beer. This call's from Lindsay. Lindsay says, I've been a keen follower of your podcasts and videos on YouTube and have been since I discovered them about 6 months ago. Oh, wow. Lindsay's a fresh viewer. What a great source of information and helpful ideas. Oh, thanks. My story of disaster is not one of mine, but one of my father's. I recall that about 25 years ago or so that he was mashing whole grain on my mother's gas stove. He was using butter muslin, which he...
Butter.
Oh, okay.
That's a secret holiday word.
It's like our friend's hot buttered rum, which was a Christmas time tradition.
Yeah.
Okay, he was using butter muslin, which he reused... which he reused every brew. Perhaps not a good move. I recall that he was draining the bag. Well,
yeah.
Which must have contained about 5 kilograms of very wet grain, poised about half a meter above the pot of lovely hot wort. Then the bag broke, and all the grain fell through the bag into the wort. What went down came back up all over my mother's kitchen ceiling.
Oh, no.
Let's say that was the last time that he ever brewed with all grain. Oh, well, you can't let that discourage you. It was a dark wort, too, and it took him the best part of a day to wipe it off every wall near the stove and the ceiling. Let's hope I never do that, the same thing in our kitchen. Lindsay says, just love the all-grain brewing, though, James. I've even managed to work out how not to make that big of a mess. Thanks again to both yourself and Steve for all your work in helping the brew community. Signing off from sunny Queensland, Australia. There you go. Take care of your wife's ceiling and walls and things when your bag breaks. I'm producing the show a bit early, so I'm hoping by the time you hear this, I've already brewed my oat malt stout with A10 Darkness from our friends and sponsors Imperial Yeast. Eben from Imperial was kind enough to send me that, along with 2 packs of L25 Hygge, which is the current seasonal yeast strain from Imperial. Hygge is a Northern European lager yeast used in Pilsner-style beer that complements significant hop additions. But Eben from Imperial says that Hygge L25 is very versatile. He says he knows of brewers brewing, Baltic porters with it. And our own Steve Wilkes brewed an oak-aged IPA experiment with Hygge last year. So what should I brew with my packets of Hygge? Should I brew another lager since it's getting to be, it's pretty warm today. Anyway, I could just probably use the basement to ferment without any mechanical refrigeration for a lager. I don't know. Or should I just brew an ale or something different? Let me know. Give me suggestions. Whatever I brew, I know those 200 billion cells in each easy-to-open packet of Imperial yeast will be ready to handle the job. My stir plate is usually dusty because I don't make starters for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches of ale anymore. For lagers or higher gravity beers, sure, I'll go to the extra effort. Ask your local homebrew store about L25 Hygge from Imperial Yeast and check out all the dependable deliciousness at imperialyeast.com. It's imperialyeast.com. Okay, it's time for beer number two. Ooh. Beer number two is Astrobacillus planetarum.
Okay.
So here we go. Scott Housel telling us about this beer.
This beer is called Astrobacillus planetarum. It's a dry-hopped kettle sour, dry-hopped with Enigma, Belma, and Huel Melon. I use the Omega Lacto Blend and Omega's Lutra Kveik dry yeast.
The problem with The problem with using Belma is she always loses her glasses. I just wanted to beat you to that one.
Zoinks!
Zoinks! Zoinks, Scoob! Okay. Ooh, it's beautiful. It's a lighter colored beer, much lighter than the one before. It's got a nice white head on it. It smells, I don't smell as good as I used to.
I can attest to that.
That's another problem. Do you smell anything?
Mm. Not really, no. I get a little bit of the smell of the beer. You know, it's a slightly sour beer. Mm. I've already tasted it. It's delicious. It has kind of a lemon. I get lemons and oranges. I get a lot of citrus in it. A lot of citrus fruit.
Yeah, it's very nice. It's a it's a nice clean sour.
Yeah, and it's not so sour. It's not, you know, like battery acid. It's just got a nice little tartness to it. That's very nice. But the citrus that comes through is really beautiful.
Yeah, it's very nice. There's a note that Scott had sent in an email. It says add a little salt at some point during tasting. So I actually have some sea salt right here.
I would agree with that. That would be nice.
I'm going to add some. Ooh, whoa! It really, the carbonation, the bubbles really popped out of that. You know that trick, though. If you salt your, if you salt your beer, it'll replenish the head there.
Yep. My dad used to put salt in his beer.
Mm. That turned it into a Goza.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. I like that quite a bit. That is 4.5%.
Mm, that's super tasty.
Yeah. Salty.
You know, I was trying to find a sour beer the other day, and I couldn't at the local liquor store.
Are they out of favor, you think, around here?
I think they are. I honestly do. We've had some guests visiting from out of town, and Joanne likes sour beers, and so we were looking for any sour I could find. I couldn't find one.
Mm.
A Goza, I couldn't find Lawfully. I couldn't find, you know, from famous ones to not famous ones. I just couldn't find anything sour. So I think they've fallen out of favor.
Well, I've got a kettle sour that I made a couple years ago that I've got like a case left I could have given you.
Oh, no.
I think it's still good. It's, you know, because there's no hop character or anything. But
right.
Okay. Letter number 6. This is from Chris. My brewing gone wrong isn't quite remarkable, but here it goes. I had a day with nothing much to do with the exception of a work meeting at 6:30 that evening. So I figured I'd brew up a simple smash beer. I did the brew in a bag method, and I still use propane due to financial reasons. That's understandable. It's okay. Those being, I think my wife would murder me if I splurged on an electric setup. Well, anyway, I go about my normal brew day slightly later than anticipated. I figured it usually takes me 3 hours from mashing in until transferring to fermenter. No problem. I start off setting everything up, but I'm slightly rushed and not paying attention. I mashed in, and 10 minutes into my mash, the flame extinguishes. I go to relight the flame, and the long lighter that I was using died. Boy, those are good for like two disposable long lighters. They're good for like two sparks, and they're gone. Yeah. So I had to run to the local convenience store to buy another. I got it lit and continued with my mash. I mashed for 1 hour. Pulled the grain and started ramping up for my boil. A couple minutes into the boil, propane tank is empty. And so now I have to run to the big box hardware store for another.
Jeez.
At this moment, I realize time isn't on my side and I need to hustle along. I made the decision to reduce my boil from 1 hour down to only 20 minutes. If I plan to still finish in the slotted time and allow for a chill, I was using aged hop for lambics for my hop additions. Kind of didn't matter in regards to the boil. I get the beer chilled and I transfer the wort to the fermenter. Somehow in my rushing around, I knocked the hose off the kettle and into the fermenter, which now requires me to dig in real quick and potentially spoiling my beer. That's where is it? Number 5, foreign object in beer.
Yeah.
I think that's number 5. Yeah. After the wort sprayed all over my garage floor and myself, I managed to rip my pants wide open when I went to lift the fermenter. This
well,
was
we have ruined furniture, but
no ripped pants. That's the first for ripped pants. This was a beer I was using Brettanomyces so I figured whatever, maybe it'll clean everything up. About 8 months later, I bottle in champagne bottles to further condition. Ironically, the easiest bottling session I ever had. I named this beer Existential Crisis with split batch variants. I'd say it's split pants variants.
Yeah.
All in all, the beer tastes great. However, another stupid issue with it. I didn't prime it well enough, so it's kind of flat after a few seconds. I'm hanging on to it, and we'll check back in a few months. I don't give up that easy. I guess it was a disaster that had the potential to righting itself. I think you could sneak up, like sneak chill a bottle down, maybe, you know, and then sneak open the cap. I think you could put some more priming sugar in there.
You sure could, actually. Really could.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah.
Sorry about the pants.
Yeah. They'll write up with wear.
Yeah. I was going to say, in the UK, pants has another connotation. This is from Sunny. My last brew session handed me my first true brewing disaster, which I suppose it's very fortunate as I've been brewing since 2005. Wow.
Wow.
Very nice.
I'm glad Sunny's sharing with us.
Oh, God, I got it. I knew you were going to do something. I just didn't know what it was. I was using my Brewzilla AIO system for the first time. Everything, and I mean everything, went wrong. First, I had the malt pipe resting on the little loop attached to the false spot. I don't know. We needed an appendix.
It's just like a child series of books on PBS.
I had
the little loop in there.
This is a Fuggles song, or Fuggles. Yeah. Fuggles. Yeah. It's not the Fuggles. What is it? It's the Wiggles. It's not the Fuggles.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Ruddles.
No, it's the Fuggles. Fruit salad, yummy, yummy. That's what my American hops taste like. Okay. Okay.
All right.
First, I had the malt pipe resting on the little loop attached to the false bottom. Of course, That's funnier than it should be.
I know. Why is that funny? But it is.
Because we're drunk. No.
You need a little loop resting on your false bottom. You just got to laugh at that.
Because we're a little loopy.
Yeah.
Of course, this meant my malt pipe bottom was pushed up.
Of course it was.
Resulting in an as yet unknown to me massive amount of grains slipping out of the malt pipe. Second.
That's what a high fiber diet will do for you.
Second, having never used a pump to recirculate the mash, I had no idea that it would suck back grains when I shut it off.
Oh.
More on that later. In other words, foreshadowing. Third, I experienced two of what I can only call boilovers during the mash. Even though the temp was 154 and two boilovers during boiling. I don't think we've had a boilover during the mash.
No.
Fourth, that's physics for you. Fourth, the pump, now thoroughly clogged from the grain and hops slipping past the malt pipe screen, was no help during cooling or moving the wort into the fermenter. Fifth and final, I tried fixing the pump by using my hose to backwash it through the intake. Well, that resulted in a load pop. Oh, it should be, I'm sure that's loud pop. Nobody
I like
likes
load pop.
That is the least successful candy name. Well, that resulted in a loud pop, which I came to find was the silicone connector bursting. Oh, my gosh.
Mm.
So now I'm waiting for the replacement parts until I can try again, much more carefully this time, to use my brand new machine. Oh, well, I still made beer, right? Oh, my gosh. Thanks, Sonny. Wow. That's a lot of moving parts.
That's a lot of moving parts. I couldn't get one X on my disaster show bingo out of that.
Oh. Really? Wow.
No, I couldn't find anything.
It's kind it's kind of a stuck sparge.
Yeah, but no way. Where's stuck sparge?
Backwash.
It is got a stuck sparge in there. Mm-hmm. Can I take that?
17.
I'm going to take that X. Okay.
All right. This is from Danny from Hendersonville, North Carolina. I was brewing my annual batch of strawberry wheat. Ooh, that sounds good. Pro tip, the best strawberries on the face of the earth are grown at Cody Berry Farm in Stanley County, North Carolina. There you go. Free plug, Cody Berry Farm. Send us some. Anyway, I keep jugs of filtered top-off water on one side of my deck and jugs of star sand on the other side so that only an idiot would ever confuse them.
Foreshadowing.
And as an extra precaution against idiocy, the jugs of star sand are labeled star sand with a dark black Sharpie. Pause. Do you want to guess now what disaster subsequently occurs? I think we can guess. Brewed.
We've cracked your code.
That's right, Danny. It's not subtle. Brew day went well. The wheat base beer was finished and needed about 3 quarts of top-off water. Uh-oh. As I was pouring the quote-unquote water into the fermenter, I noticed the aforementioned label Star Sand on the side of the jug that I was using. I estimate that at this point I had poured 1.5 quarts of Star Sand into the brew. Realizing that I was an idiot, I checked on some homebrew forums to see whether such a quantity of Star Sand would be detrimental. Pause. Would you like to guess now what I discovered? Turns out I'm not the first idiot ever to do this. The results were mixed as to whether this would harm the brew or human health. Since I don't trust advice from any source other than basic brewing, I used caution and poured all 5 gallons out into the garden. The only good news is that because the strawberries go into the secondary, I did not waste the most expensive ingredient. I started over and the second batch turned out great. I love your show. Never retire.
Don't really mean that.
So what do you
think? I got number 9 out of that. I got a beer dumped.
Beer dumped and weird ingredient, 15. Yeah, that was definitely beer dumped.
I get weird ingredient too. Okay.
15. So what do you think? A quart and a half of star sand in 5 gallons?
I probably wouldn't let that go. Probably dump that.
At least, I mean, I don't think it would taste good. And I think it would be probably acidic and diluted and kind of
acidic, kind of a salty, acidic-y. Yeah, I don't think it would be good.
No, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I think
you could turn it into a hot dog beer.
You can just put more. Just put some mustard seed in it.
Just put some mustard on it.
To put some mustard on it. I think it's a better part of valor. This is David from North Carolina. Howdy, James. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I've been patiently waiting for my opportunity to join the Disaster Club, and it's finally happened to me this year.
Well, that's good, though.
Yeah, exactly. But that reinforces my contention that now when people have a disaster, the first thing they think of is us. So,
such is my life.
David says, I had a notion that a wee heavy with pecans would be perfect, or a perfect late winter beer. So I set out to brew one last January. I got some local pecans that I toasted on my stove. And when I say toasted, I mean really toasted. They were teetering on the edge of being burnt, but I thought, what's the worst that could happen? I bagged up my nuts and...
Well, that's the worst that can happen.
I bagged up my nuts and moved on to the next step. That's what happens when you get older. You got to move to the next step, you got to bag up your nuts. I've made some delicious wee heavy in the past by boiling down part of the wort to a thick syrup and then adding it back. Great idea. So I made sure that I included that in my recipe for this batch. On brew day, I mashed and ran off the wort without any issue and saved about 1 gallon in a pot that I put on an induction hot plate in my garage. Since it was January and quite cold outside, I came into the comfort of my home and managed to get caught up on watching a TV show with my wife. About 30 minutes later, my wife says she smells something funny. I doubt she was laughing. I think to myself, of course, she always thinks that brewing smells funny. It smells great in here. And then I carried on with the show. About 5 minutes later, I detect an odd aroma that smells a lot like smoke mixing with mashing grains. Something does smell funny, I thought. I went out to the garage and I was greeted by a thick cloud of smoke billowing out of the pot of wort syrup that I was making. I immediately took it off the burner and set it outside, meanwhile opening the doors and turning on a fan. Afterwards, I made the walk of shame back inside to lick my wounds and let my wife know that she was right. One very defeated brew day later, I had the syrupless batch of Wee Heavy in the fermenter. Everything fermented out great, and I added the pecans after fermentation was over. I kegged and carbonated it and took a sip, expecting to be rewarded for grasping victory from the hands of defeat. I immediately wrenched my face in disgust. The beer was astringent, burnt-tasting, and terrible.
Oh.
Remember the toasted pecans I mentioned earlier? Well, this was the worst that could have happened. I dumped the rest of the batch and haven't made a Wee Heavy since. Maybe this January I can redeem myself, this time with less smoke.
He definitely needs to do that, because that is too nice of a style of beer
Yep.
to give up on because you had a bad brew day.
P.S. David from North Carolina says, a thick layer of charred wort is almost impossible to clean out of a nice new pot. Uh-oh.
Mm.
Did I say David from North Carolina in the beginning?
I think you did.
Okay. All right. We're one more letter, and then we get to drink another beer. This is from David, who titles this, "My Brewing Bucket Jumped to Its Death." David says, I've followed your podcast for more than a decade and always enjoyed the brewing disasters. I never planned to be a contributor. Well, we never do. I have a Grainfather G30 with over 60 successful Grainfather brews completed. All right, David says, in August, I decided to brew a clone of a famous British ale from the brewer Adnams called Ghost Ship. A 4.5% citrus pale ale hopped with Citra and Cascade. My tilt hydrometer showed that the terminal gravity had been reached and it was time to bottle. I drew off 100 milliliters to take a proper gravity reading. 1.011 confirmed it was bottling time. I set the bucket up on the edge of the kitchen table. I pushed a small wedge under the rear corner to tilt the bucket slightly so I could extract the maximum amount of beer from the bucket. So there, the edge had a wedge.
The edge had a wedge.
This is from Dr. Seuss. I have used the small tilt of the bucket more than 80 times before with no issues. Part to the arrangement with my wife is that she gets breakfast in bed when I take over her kitchen. Wow.
Wow. So the beer with the wedge
is sitting on the edge.
And he had to put it on the ledge?
That's right.
The beer with the wedge is on the ledge. Okay.
The beer with the wedge is sitting on the edge of the ledge.
The vessel with the pestle has the brew that is true.
That's number 14 again. So when he's homebrewing in the kitchen, his wife gets breakfast in bed. Wow.
Yeah.
Before starting the bottling, I decided to make another cup of tea for both of us. I took the cup of tea to my wife, planning to give her a progress update. I'm sure she's just enthralled. As I reached the top of the stairs, I heard a loud, thunderous crash from the kitchen. I ran downstairs, but I knew what had happened before I entered the kitchen. The bucket must have been slightly too close to the edge, or there was some moisture on the edge of the table. Oof. Regardless of the cause, the 36-pint bucket decided to jump off the kitchen table and crash onto the tiled kitchen floor. I entered the kitchen and saw at least 10 to 15 pints of Ghost Ship had escaped the split bucket and was rapidly filling the kitchen floor space. I decided the best damage limitation strategy was to throw the bucket out the kitchen door into the patio slash garden. I picked up the bucket, but this caused the radial crack in the bucket to open even further and to dump the remaining contents all over the already flooded kitchen floor. I threw the empty bucket outside, gobs of yeasty sludge flying everywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
I shouted to my wife to throw down the bathroom towels so I could soak up as much of the 36 pints of beer as possible. 8 to 10 towels were dispatched and became rapidly beer-soaked. We both.
But did you wring them out in bottle?
Yeah, they're clean towels, right?
They're clean.
And this it filters your beer at the same time.
That's right. That's right. It's
win-win.
It's a terry cloth. And guess what?
What?
That was the number three. I call that three a beer wort spill spray.
Oh,
would
yeah.
Would you agree?
Spill. That's definitely a spill.
Okay, I got bingo.
Wow. Excellent.
I did it.
Well,
14, 3, and 15 right in a row.
Well, you can also do number 19, helpful spouse.
I already have that one.
She's tossing the towels down. We both cleaned up the mess and filled the washing machine with beer-filled towels. I then had to wash the kitchen floor to perfection to remove every hint of beer, a very big job. The last job was to taste the hydrometer and think, yes, that would have been a good beer.
What could have been?
Thanks,
you know,
David.
If you take your beer-soaked towels and you just run them through the rinse cycle, you can call that a party guile. You can get that little 1 or 2% beer out of it.
Okay,
all right.
I'm planning to rack my little 1 gallon batch of mead to secondary today. I made that mead with a homebrew veneer ingredient kit from our friends and sponsors Ricky and Kelly of Groenfell.com. That's right. Not only can you get homebrew mead ingredient kits now on Groenfell.com, you can get complete homebrew mead equipment kits. Both the mead ingredient and equipment kits come in 1 gallon and 5 gallon variations or versions. I just got the ingredients, you know, because I already have all the necessary gear. But if you're wanting to, say, get into small batch mead making, one of the equipment kits from Groenfell.com is just the ticket. My veneer kit came with delicious Vermont wildflower honey, yeast nutrient, a bit of oak, and enough corks from my bottles. And the instructions were very well written by Ricky, the mead maker. So, you know, if you have a friend or relative who's been wanting to try making mead, setting them up with an equipment kit and an ingredient kit will be a fun post-holiday time gift. You know, Groenfell and Havoc Meaderies make wonderful and creative craft and traditional meads. Now, using their ingredients and expertise, you can make your own. Check out the homebrew mead kits and all the honey-based deliciousness at family-owned and operated Groenfell.com. That's Groenfell.
We have the final beer from Scott. This is the Nelson Flambic, and the label has a picture of Willie Nelson drinking a Lone Star. And I think there's a picture of him and, is that Merle Haggard in the background? It's kind of hard to tell.
I can't really tell, but I'm going to say yeah. That looks kind of like Merle Haggard.
First thing I remember knowing is the very first live music concert I ever saw was Merle Haggard in the 70s, a little kid.
Oh, my goodness. I don't see the woman with the rose tattoo.
When he saw the new steak taco, all of a sudden he knew that he'd always be indebted for the rest of his life to the woman with the rose tattoo.
I got a fever.
The fever for what?
There's only one thing that'll cure it. It's got to be more cowbell.
I got a fever.
Fever.
And the only prescription is more cowbell. That sounds like the open to a Loverboy song.
That's right.
Okay, here's Scott talking about Nelson. My wife is. I don't know if you hear that. That's what happens when the garage door goes up and down in the house.
I can't hear it.
I think it. Let's see if our listeners can hear it. But that's. It's what happens when your audio studio is literally over a garage. It's like, you know, when they forget that you're up here recording and they brrr. Okay. I'm going to leave it in.
I do think on the label of this Nelson Flambic.
Yes.
I think he's drinking a Lone Star.
That's what I said.
Oh, sorry.
I said that.
Sorry.
You never listened to me.
I had a fever.
You were too busy with your cowbell. Okay, here's Scott with the descriptor for Nelson Flambic.
This one is called Nelson Flambic.
I said that.
It is a Nelson Sauvin dry hopped lambic style beer from my Solera project. Mm. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. That is delicious.
I saw Nelson Sauvin hops being harvested.
Yeah.
In Nelson, New Zealand. Oh, this is the color is between the first and the second. It's a little darker than the one that we just had, but a little lighter than the first one. Mm-hmm. Oh, now I can smell that. Wow, that smells good. Talk so I can drink.
Well, it's just a lovely little, you know, lambic style beer. So,
ooh,
it's got the it's a little bit sour, a little bit tart. The Nelson Sauvin, I can't say that, you know, if you said what hop is this, I wouldn't know. But since I know,
ooh,
it also it has that little winey character, you know, and it's very nice.
Oh,
really. Now is a lambic is that a beer that gets a little new beer and a little old beer? If I got that correct.
Well, I think he said I was opening and drinking while he was talking, but I think he you know, this is part of his Solera.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a dry hopped mixed culture aged sour.
It's delicious.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, he's got a good thing going with that Solera. And, you know, best of luck to Scott that he keeps that going on. Hopefully he didn't get carried away and add something to it that, you know, one day, knock wood. You know, of course, he's a smart brewer and knows what things taste like.
Great.
So I'd be nervous that I'd ruin it, you know, that I'd put something and add something to the Solera. And for listeners that may not know, I assume everybody knows what Solera is, but if you don't, it's no shame. A Solera is where you take and you're aging a beer, and every year, say, you take out like a third of it and then add fresh beer into the barrel or your container or whatever. I think that's essentially the theory of it. That's the basis of it. So, you know, it's something that, you know, continues to age but gets fresh beer, you know, infused in it as you remove some of the beer out. Really good. Really, really good. This is my favorite, I think.
I think it might be mine too, actually. Because it kind of pushes all the buttons. It's a little bit sour. The Astrobacillus, absolutely delicious, but a little bit the sourness is a little toned down in the Flambic. So it's a little bit more quaffable for my palate.
Yeah, it's good. It's got a depth of complexity that the second beer didn't have. The second beer was just a nice, refreshing, tart beer.
Yeah.
You know, a daily drinker, I would say.
Yeah.
This one is you know, you want to linger on a little bit more. I don't see an ABV, but it's good. Really good.
It's delish.
Probably hard to calculate an ABV when you're working with a Solera thing.
I would think so.
All right.
It can't be very much. It can't be very strong.
We're in the home stretch.
Okay.
Okay. Jeff W. says, greetings from Van Wert, Iowa. W-E-R-T. Not W-O-R-T. Last year, after a small break from brewing after moving, I decided to jump back in and try pressure fermenting. On my first brew back, brew day went well, and I had watched plenty of podcasts and the videos before trying to ferment in my keg. I bought the floating dip tube and duo tight bow tie spunding valve. I'm just reading words. Sanitized everything and set my spunding valve to 10 PSI. I thought everything was going well, insert foreshadowing music here, until On day three, I thought to myself that it ought to be done by now, and I hadn't heard any gas or excess gas escaping. I tried adjusting the Spunding valve to a higher PSA and or PSI, and instead of gas escaping, I sprayed carbonated beer all over my wall. Oh. Got the valve pulled off the keg and discovered that it had been assembled wrong before I got it and hadn't noticed the arrow going the wrong way. I spent close to an hour slowly pulling the relief valve, mopping out the beer that came out, and repeating the process before I got the pressure down. The good news is that my Texas Blonde turned out to be amazing. The bad news is that it would be hard to duplicate. That's always a thing. Thanks, Jeff. Got people spunding.
Spunding.
This is from Troy. Troy says, so I decided to brew my annual Imperial Stout, and being the uneducated, quote, experienced brewer that I am, I thought that I would learn from past mistakes, and instead of trying to cram all of my grain bill into my 10.5 Anvil Foundry, I would pull out my trusty Bayou Classic kettle to mash in. Everything was going great until I tried to pull the brew bag out of the kettle. It came out surprisingly easy, and with very little grain in it. That's right. Oh. After 5+ years of being careful with my bag, I had become careless with my bag and ripped a hole in my sack.
Oh, no.
Oh. Ah! That's my new sound effect.
Yeah.
That's the Wilhelm scream. Are you familiar with the Wilhelm scream?
No, not going to be.
Look it up. It's like from many, many years ago in like a Western movie, this sound effect of this guy screaming. And it's been in like every movie since. It's been in Star Wars, Indiana Jones, just every movie. There's a commercial that's running now. If you listen closely, you can hear that guy.
Now it's on Basic Brewing.
Yeah, that's right. That's the Wilhelm scream. So when you rip a hole in your sack, you get that. Apparently, my wire whisk had caught the valve while I was whilst I was diligently stirring to ensure a proper efficiency. Well, now what do I do? I have a kettle full of grain and wort that simply will not do. Being a child of the 80s, my inner MacGyver emerged, and I pulled out the sawhorses and 2x4s to set my brew kettle of wort and grain upon while I drain into my foundry with a spare sack to catch the grain. That costs extra. Again, everything is going great until the spare sack decides that it would much rather swim in the wort and grain rather than catch the grain. I closed the valve on the kettle and set it all up again. After that, everything else about the brew day went smoothly, ensuring that this beer will be the best I've ever brewed, but will never be able to duplicate. It's a running theme.
That's two in a row, yeah.
Thanks, Troy. there's a video out there on YouTube that shows like a ton of examples of where the Wilhelm scream is used. You know, it's like stormtroopers, you know, being shot and falling off a ledge and stuff, and they scream. It's the Wilhelm scream.
I'm definitely going to check that out.
Okay. Robbie from Chillicothe, Illinois.
Chillicothe,
Illinois. I thought you might be helpful with that. Robbie says, a longtime listener, first-time emailer. I've learned so much from you two and your guests over the years, and Steve's gumbo ya-ya recipe is still one of my all-time favorites.
That'll make your bell stand up.
But now on to the meat of the matter. Okay, now there are some of these I have if you included more than one disaster story, I clipped them out, but these Robbie has three short disasters, so I included all three of them.
A disaster triptych.
A trifecta. One of those. Okay, Robbie says, I have three disasters to bring up. None of them horrible, so I think my brewing hobby has been pretty successful. The first is when I was milling some grain. When dumping it into my grain mill, I didn't notice the hole in the side of the bag and ended up with 1.6 pounds of grain on my kitchen floor. Yes, I swept it up and weighed it before throwing it away so I would know how much to adjust my recipe. Now, that is smart.
Dad?
I just would have been frustrated. So I decided to look through my grains I had on hand and create a new recipe on the spot. So my pale ale became an old ale, and I've named it Ye Split Grain Oldie Ale. That goes with the split pants golden ale or whatever, pale ale from before. Now, okay, here's a question to you, Steve. If you spilt grain on your kitchen floor, this is whole unmilled grain, would you go ahead and use it? Would you sweep it up and use it?
I don't know. I'm going to say probably not.
Yeah. The more I think about it, the more.
There are a lot of caveats. Let's just pretend that I spilled some grain on a newly swept and mopped floor.
Yes.
Maybe, I don't know. I don't know. Probably not. But I would say, biologically or in terms of sanitation, you're going to boil that stuff away. So I wouldn't worry about it in terms of any health thing, unless you got like some spilled ketchup or something down there.
Well, but I wrote back to Robbie and I said, we're going to have this little debate on the show. And he said, well, I can't remember what exactly he said, but he said, something like, I have 3 cats and 4 dogs and 5 kids. So,
that would be a no. Yeah. See, that's the caveat. It would depend on my, yeah. That's definitely a no.
Yeah. Yeah. My dogs lick the floor all day long. So,
Yeah.
Okay. So, see, that was a nice short story. My second story is when, this is Robbie. My second story is when I recently botched some honey in my, oh, Bochade. Not botched. Oh. Not botched.
You botched it.
That's what I thought. Okay. My second story is when I recently bochade some honey, or bogarted. No, bochade some honey in my crock pot on low for a bochet mead. After a few hours in getting the honey to the color and taste I wanted, the crock pot insert was too warm to handle, so I unplugged it to let it cool for a few hours. Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Well, I ended up forgetting about it before bed, and it sat overnight. The next day, I figured, what the heck? The honey tastes good, so let's mix it up. The day after that, when I opened my bucket to give the mead a stir, I noticed dead ants floating around in my brew. They must have found my crock pot when it sat overnight. Anyway, yeah. I spent the next 30 minutes with a sanitized turkey baster sucking up floating ants.
Oh.
So he won't sweep things off the floor, but he's sucking up floating ants. This brew fermented and didn't show any signs of infection, so it might turn out okay.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
My last incident is a broken glass fermenter. Broken glass. Number four. Number four is broken glass. Since I work second shift 6 days a week, my brewing takes place on Sundays. But I will do the quicker activities at either 1 a.m. when I get home or 11 a.m. before getting ready for work. One day before work, I was racking 5 gallons of mead onto different forms of blueberries. Wow, fresh, frozen, juice, pie filling, and dried into 1 gallon glass fermenters to see which way I liked best. Robbie, why did you not send that experiment to us? Well, I dropped the carboy with the frozen blueberries on the kitchen floor, shattering it. I cleaned up.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. I cleaned up the mess as much as I had time for by sweeping up the glass berries and toweling up the liquid. Then I threw another towel over the spot and went to work. Not necessarily a disaster, but I didn't like going to work, knowing that I'm going to have to give my kitchen a thorough sweeping and mopping after work.
Ooh, and if you leave it all day, you could have like ants and...
Yeah, well, we've already proven that he's got ants.
Well, yeah, but I mean like a lot of ants.
Hey, ant. Hey, ant.
Hey, ant.
Keep up the great work, and hopefully my email wasn't too long. No, that was manageable.
No.
You've got three. P.S. I'm not typing this email from work, Robbie said. That was good. That was a good threefer. All right.
A threefer.
We're nearing the end. Will from Stockholm, Sweden.
Daryl Stockholm.
I don't know. I'd like to go to Sweden one day.
I would love to go to Sweden, Denmark. You know, I like Denmark for the ham.
Apparently, according to Ancestry.com or whatever, like I'm 2% Denmarkian or whatever, or Danish.
Denmarkian? Denmarkian?
Danish. Danish? No.
That's... Well, you're probably like about 60% cheese Danish at this point.
Well, I figure that anything from, you know, the rest of it is like from Great Britain, so I figure that's Viking.
Yeah.
Okay, Will from Stockholm, Sweden. As I promised last year, here is my biggest and most expensive brewing disaster ever.
What, did you buy InBev? That'd be a pretty big disaster.
Now. Like many homebrewers, I seriously contemplated going pro. I was accepted into a brewing school south of Stockholm, my hometown.
Nice.
And the high school where I teach gave me a sabbatical to pursue my dream. Wow, that's cool. After 4 months of having a blast studying the ins and outs of brewing, it was time to do an internship. I found one at a local microbrewery, and off I went. Not surprisingly, they didn't trust me to do anything, so I mostly worked on the canning line. As time progressed, they allowed me to do more and more. Everything was homebrewing on a larger scale, but with stronger chemicals and bigger consequences if there's an accident. While homebrewers use Starzan and PBW, pros use peruvic acid to sanitize and caustic acid and lye to clean. I will never forget the teacher at my brewing school telling the story about getting lye on his leg and not realizing it until he had a hole a knuckle deep in his thigh.
Yeah.
Oh. Nobody likes a knuckle deep hole. Since life goes on, since life goes on regardless of what is happening in school or work, one night, I was up half the night with my sick son. Oh, the next day, I went to my internship on 3 hours of sleep rather than calling in sick. I could do it at 49, right?
Right.
World's oldest intern. I filled and manually moved kegs all day. About 4 p.m., my supervisor told me to take the hose off the conical fermenter since we were going to can the rest of the beer in it the next day. In an exhausted haze, I took off the tri-clamp, and boom! The beer started shooting out at the same pressure as water through a fire hose.
Oh, my goodness.
I had taken off the tri-clamp before the butterfly valve and not after it. As you can imagine, the brewers look on like deer in a headlight. I flailed hopelessly to put the valve back on while getting the most expensive shower of my life. Thankfully, one of the brewers, not the one staring in the headlights, jumped into action, removed the CO2 pressure on the tank, opened up the detached butterfly valve to let the beer rush through it as we muscled it back onto the conical tank. Boy, now that's thinking right there. You open the valve and then put it back on the thing.
Yep.
Note that for future. We closed the valve and the disaster was minimized. The pressure from the beer shooting out of the tank was so strong that it destroyed my waterproof Timex watch. Apparently, it takes a licking and passes out never to be revived.
I guess so.
Will from Stockholm gets credit for an obscure reference there that takes a licking and keeps on ticking. That's an ancient one. Do you remember the spokesman for Timex? Who was the spokesman for Timex?
I don't remember. I can kind of see him in my mind's eye, but I don't remember. John Cameron Swayze, that's right.
We were so yes.
Don't you love it when someone like who doesn't know the answer then they agree with you cuz like Now I know I'm right.
But
I remember now. Yeah.
But that's the way my brain works. I don't know something, and then somebody tells me, and that, you know, it's like, oh, duh, of course. We were soaked, cold, and ankle-deep in tropical hazy IPA. Oh. For the next 2 hours, we cleaned up the aftermath of the disaster. Surprisingly, Will says, the brewery did not tell me to get lost and never return. On the other hand, the next day, they did ask for the insurance information from my school. It seems that I had dumped $7,000 of beer down the drain. I finished up my internship and realized that brewing might not be the profession for me, so I am happily back at teaching and homebrewing, where the size of my accidents are so much less hazardous. Thanks, Will.
That is a true, true brewing disaster.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Nothing could ever top that, right?
Never.
Nothing. Nothing could ever top that. I have in my hand the 15th story. Now, should we taste our fourth and final disaster show beer before I read this story? Or after?
Now, is this the 10-year-old?
This is the 10-year-old fruitcake barley wine that I brewed in 2013. Should we save it till the very end, or should we?
Let's save it for the very end.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Because, all right. This is a pretty long story, but it's a good story. I'm going to take a sip of the 8.5% beer before I get started. So what's your do you have a favorite story or the most shocking story so far?
Honestly, I think the last one. Dumping 77. How much?
$7,000.
$7,000. I couldn't remember $7,000 or 7,000 gallons, but $7,000 worth of beer, that's a disaster.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Okay. Okay. Now, this is from Brian G. The world's most expensive Keyser build.
Must be from Dubai.
It's like that thing they want to build in Oklahoma City. Have you seen that? It's like 130 stories tall or something, this thing. Look it up.
In Oklahoma City?
Yeah. It's like twice as high as the tallest building that's there now.
Well, good Lord, a tornado will come along
in three months
and knock it over.
I mean, bless their hearts.
God love them.
God love them. Yeah. Okay, the world's most expensive Keyser build from Brian G. Hello, James and Steve. We met at this year's HomebrewCon in San Diego. I'm sure you met quite a few people. Yes, and if we saw you, we'd probably remember. But, you know, we're old and we're probably drinking beer. Okay, Brian says, I'm frantically writing this after returning from physical therapy.
That's not my fault.
Foreshadowing. You shook his hand too hard.
Yeah.
And after listening to your recent podcast informing listeners that the disaster story deadline is today, December 15th, although not a direct brewing disaster, I think it is. I figure it's related to the hobby. In 2014, we added a patio. Because I'm a homebrewer, I wanted to be able to serve my homebrew on the patio. Instead of purchasing an outdoor kegerator, I decided to build a remote Keyser. I proceeded to convert a chest freezer and plum beverage lines from basement to patio. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Fast forward to late 2021, the Keyser dies. I was unable to purchase the same freezer, so I would have to default to plan B and purchase a different freezer and build a new collar. You know, it's a wooden collar around that you put the taps through.
Yep.
In early 2022, I purchased a slightly larger and heavier, foreshadowing, freezer. Due to life's other distractions, it would be early September of 2023, yes, 2023, until I was finally wrapping up the build. Just in time, because I had 15 gallons of fermenting beer ready to keg, along with six other 5-gallon kegs containing beer and cider waiting for a home. So you may be wondering, where is the disaster? Recall that the freezer is slightly larger and thus heavier, along with a larger collar, which adds mass. Because the floor is not level in this area of the basement, I would need to place shims under the Keyser. This was not unexpected because I also leveled the previous Keyser. I set about shimming. That's my favorite. I said that's my favorite sentence so far.
I love that. So yeah, that,
I said about shimming. Because of the weight of the keyser, I was struggling to get the shims under the left rear corner where the compressor resides. I needed to take some weight off the shim. I grew one eyebrow and lifted with all my might, using just my right arm, whilst trying to slide the shim under with my left hand. Suddenly, I felt a gut-wrenching pop, along with a loud snapping noise. Ah! It felt like my right shoulder and elbow exploded.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, no. I slumped down onto my knees to assess the situation. A little backstory. In September of 2020, in the midst of COVID, I had surgery to reattach my right tricep tendons at the elbow twice. I was in shock. Sweat poured from my brow and soaked my shirt. It felt like my shoulder had dislocated, and I feared that I had pulled the anchors at the elbow out a third time. I looked down at my arm but couldn't determine much visually. I gently wiggled my fingers. Okay, they work. I tried to bend my arm. That hurt like hell. I was struggling. I tried shrugging my right shoulder. That hurt like hell. My wife was not due to be home for a while, so I needed to find a mirror and take a better look. Okay, this trigger alert. This story gets pretty graphic, or pretty, I don't know. You might be uncomfortable if you're easily,
it's getting pretty gruesome.
If you're easily. I managed to extract myself from my shirt and take a look in the mirror. Oh, that doesn't look good. I don't recall my bicep looking so large, despite my wife's feigned admiration for my well-defined guns. It was obvious I had ruptured my bicep tendon at the shoulder. My bicep was balled up just above my right elbow. I looked like Popeye the Sailor Man. The shoulder does not appear to be abnormal, but it hurts like hell. However, it appears the tricep tendons remain intact. Since it was late in the evening, and I did not have any life-threatening injuries, a proper medical assessment would have to wait. Oh, my God. After a miserable night's sleep, I managed to get an appointment the following day with the same orthopedic surgeon who repaired my elbow twice. He was glad to see me since I already bought him a boat and a... No, he didn't say that. He's also worked on my left shoulder in the past. The doctor walked into the exam room and shook his head. Upon examination, he quickly determined I had indeed ruptured my bicep and I likely had more damage to the shoulder. I know this and I did not stay at a Holiday Inn. Later that day, I had an MRI, and at a later follow-up visit, the extent of the damage was revealed. To be fair, it is likely I had some degree of age-related damage already with the arthritis, but this was the straw that broke the proverbial camel's back.
Boy.
The diagnosis. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Superior labrum anterior to posterior tear. Posterior inferior capsulolabral tear, proximal biceps tendon rupture, partial rotator cuff tear, subacromial impingement, and acromioclavicular joint arthritis. Oh, my God. I would need surgery, and it should be done quickly to improve tendon repair odds. Due to my wife's schedule, it would be 4 weeks until I could undergo surgery. The upside, no. Now, what's the sign? You know, you're a homebrewer where you know all is lost, but you keep going. How many stories have we had where it's like, you know? But anyway, the brew day went on.
Yeah, right.
The upside is that I have 4 weeks to figure out how to transfer 15 gallons of fermented beer to kegs and get them into the keyser along with the other 6 kegs using my non-dominant arm. After resting a week, I decided to retackle leveling the keyser without using my right arm. Using a pry bar, a block of wood, and my knee, I was able to lift the corner of the keyser and slip the shim under with my left hand, and it only took seconds. I should have done that in the first place. Just doing that would have saved, you know, all this pain and misery.
What? No kidding.
Now, how to transfer beer to the kegs and load the keyser. The first beer was easy since the fermenter was on a table next to the keyser. I was able to place an empty 5-gallon keg onto the keyser, into the keyser with my left arm and transfer directly into the keg. Onto the carboys, which are located on the floor. I have a few 2.5-gallon torpedo kegs, and I determined I could lift and place in the keyser with one arm. Using a carboy cap and ultra-low CO2 pressure, I pushed the beer from the two carboys into four torpedo kegs and stacked them 2x2 in the keyser. Onto the 6 remaining 5-gallon kegs. God. I can't possibly lift the keg up and over the collar without injuring my left shoulder. If only I had a pulley system, that would be a future project consideration. I would need to get creative. So it's he's keeping it going, this Brian is he's going. I stacked some storage crates in a stair-step pattern to reach the top of the keyser, then bear-hugged the keg with my left arm, lifting them up a level at a time. I then climbed a stepladder, all without using my right arm, and gently lowered the keg into the keyser with my left arm. Lowering with one arm is much easier than lifting. I repeated the process until all the kegs were in the keyser, attached the gas and liquid lines, and called it a day. Good Lord.
Wow.
Get that man a beer.
No kidding.
It took a large part of the following day to clean the fermenters. He still cleaned the fermenters! And I managed not to drop the carboys. Boy, thank goodness. It's been over 3 months since the injury. I have been in therapy for 8 weeks. I have many more weeks of PT ahead of me. I'm told to expect it to be several months to about a year before I'm back to near 100%. Mm-hmm. This experience has me contemplating streamlining my brewing and kegging to minimize heavy lifting in the future. Considering the cost of the keyser build and the resulting surgery, the cost of this keyser is well into the 6 figures.
Well, I guess so.
Therefore, I proclaim this the world's most expensive keyser. Signed, Brian G.
Wow.
Oh, my God. That may be the most dramatic disaster show story we've ever had.
Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, pretty much.
I can't think of another one.
So you detach
your
bicep,
and it slumps down.
And it slumps down, and you keep brewing.
Yeah. Boy, I'm on the couch.
Yeah, I'm like
I'm on the couch if I get a hangnail.
Golly.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, you know, the Book of Shem, which comes just after Deuteronomy, he was an old Hebrew king.
All right. I have in my hand the final beer.
The final? Oh, yes. We have the final beer. Oh, and I'm going to use my basic brewing bottle opener.
Oh, I'm using a generic...
Okay, let's see if we get up.
Who knows what this will do?
Let's hear what it sounds like.
Nope.
There's no push. There's no... Shh.
I had just a tiny bit. Now, this is 10-year-old beer. And this sucker is flat. It's pretty flat. I have one more bottle downstairs.
Mine has some... Almost has a little head on it.
Almost. It's fairly clear. Okay, yep. this was yep. brewed.
Mine's deep red.
This was brewed, yes. This is brewed November 19th, 2013. This is a 2-gallon batch. 8 pounds or 3.6 kilograms of 2-row. 4 ounces or 113 grams of 90 Lovibond crystal. That was the malt bill. I started the boil. At the beginning of the boil, I added 7 grams of Magnum for a 60-minute boil. 30 minutes into the boil, I added 1/2 cup of brown sugar, or 136 grams, 4 tablespoons or 75 grams of molasses. 10 minutes before the end of the boil, I added 6 ounces of candied mango and 6 ounces of pineapple. That's 170 grams. And at 5 minutes before the end of the boil, I added 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, ginger, cloves, and nutmeg. Mm-hmm. I fermented with US-05, started out at 1101, final gravity 1013 for an ABV of 11.8%. Woo!
Well, I can tell you that it's still potent. It actually tastes quite good to me. I don't get it. It's definitely a well-aged beer.
I can smell a little cardboard.
I get a little cardboard. It's not horrible. I still get a little bit of the. But mostly what I get is kind of the burnt sugar character.
Oh,
I'm not getting any mango or anything like that.
No, but the spices.
And I get the spices. Yeah,
I'm getting clove.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it actually tastes pretty good.
I was going to say, it doesn't taste bad to me.
No, it's not. It's not hot.
It's not hot. It does, I wish it was a little more carbonated.
It does taste like an aged beer. It tastes stale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it tastes a little stale.
But it's not horrible.
But it's not horrible. No, I mean, you know, if you, well, you know, this is one of those beers where you're not going to drink a pint of this anyway, unless you're nuts.
Mm.
You don't care how new it is, because it's just so strong. But, you know, if you handed me a little snifter pour of this, I wouldn't turn my nose up at it.
Like a 1 ounce, you know, yeah. Like a little.
Yeah, but I couldn't drink a pint of it.
No.
I'm actually quite surprised at how good it is.
It's not horrible.
No.
It's not great. But it's not bad. You know,
it's not bad, and you know, since I know about it, since I know its history. I know that it's lost a lot of its complexity, and there is a little bit of that cardboardy thing of an old beer. But it's not. But again, it's very tiny. It's, you know, we're speaking as like writing judging sheets on this. It's actually not that bad.
Yeah, in the past when we've tasted old beers, you know, they've been like normal gravity beers, you know, that have no hops, and they're just like the cardboard really comes out, and it's like syrupy and stale and no bitterness. This, because it has spices in it, you know, that's it's kind of that redeems it. You know, it's a little bit syrupy because there's no carbonation, but the spice in there, the cloves especially, maybe a little bit of or not. There's no cloves. Yeah, there's cloves. There's cinnamon, ginger, cloves, and nutmeg. Yeah, I think I'm getting the cloves and the nutmeg.
That's what I get, and the alcohol. Frankly, I mean, I get the warmth of it because it's so strong, and that alcohol's, you know, clearly still there, and so it's very warming. It's almost like a little whiskey.
Yeah, a few sips is enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a few sips are enough.
I've already reached my saturation point there. It's like okay, I'm done. Yeah.
Well, now you want to hear my brewing disaster story?
I forgot. Yes, please. Sorry.
So well, that's okay. So, I would be a category number 9.
Number 9. Number
beer
9.
Dumped.
Number 9. Okay.
So I made this. India Pale Ale, kind of an English version of it. You know, a little bit restrained hops. These Maris Otter, honey malt, and I think special roast. And I hopped it with all Northern Brewer. Which were German Northern Brewer hops. And I was excited about the beer. I was looking forward to it and having a nice pale ale or India pale ale on handy. So I get to brewing day, or bottling day, I mean, and the beer has been fermenting for a couple of 3 weeks. It's been, you know, gone through primary fermentation. I moved it to a secondary fermenter, which was actually the bottling bucket. I used my conical fermenter to bottle with. And the beer didn't clear. The beer was, you know, it just never got that clear break or cold break or I don't know what. And then I primed it, and it foamed.
Oh.
And I mean, it foamed and foamed and foamed all over the dang place. And then I was like, well, I don't know what to do here. So I went in and tried to bottle it. I couldn't bottle it because it just foamed all over the dang place.
Weird.
I got like six bottles bottled, and then I quit. I was like, there's something wrong with this beer. There's just something wrong. It tasted fine. The numbers were good. You know, the final gravity was what I expected it to be. There wasn't anything out of line in that way. But I couldn't get it in the bottle. Well, so then I dumped it. I dumped the whole thing, except for that six-pack. And then I went, well, if I've got the six-pack, I might as well save it and see how it tastes maybe in 2 or 3 weeks. Well, hell, it's one of the best beers ever made in my life. But almost all of it went down the garbage. So...
God bless us, everyone.
God bless us, everyone. So I don't even, I don't know what to do about it because it was just one of those, and I've never had that happen to me before.
That's weird.
I've never had that happen. And I just was like, well, there's just something wrong with this beer. It's going to be a, you know, a infected mess. And maybe it would have been. Maybe it's one of the, maybe it was infected, but it would take, you know, sometimes beer infections take a long time to show up.
Right.
You know, right. It's like, drink it fresh and you're okay. But if you save it for 6 months, then it's like, ooh, what's wrong with this?
Yeah.
So it might have been one of those deals. I don't know. Maybe if somebody has an idea, let me know. I don't know what I did right or wrong. Mostly wrong.
It sounds like there's an excess amount of carbonation.
Yeah. The beer. I mean, it's just totally weird. I've never, you know, I mean, I did everything, you know, according to Hoyle, you know, I did it all correctly as far as I know. And. But there you go. So that's my brewing disaster.
I'm sure I've done something. It seems like there was something during this past year that I said, I need to start writing these things down. but maybe I just want to forget.
Yeah.
And move on.
I just want to forget.
Well, Steve.
Well, here we are at the end of another year.
Here we are again. Thanks again for hanging around. Well, I mean, hanging around for an hour and 45 minutes doing this thing today, and then hanging around for, you know, almost 20, coming up on 20 years.
Coming up.
And I appreciate your support and your help and everything else, and gotta appreciate our sponsors, Desiree and Dave of HighGravityBrew.com. Imperial Yeast, the American Homebrewers Association, Grunfeld and Havoc Meaderies for staying with us, and everybody who contributes, you know, through Patreon and the financial supporters. It's amazing that we keep going, and it's all because of, you know, everybody's support. So now I'm sounding like a, you know, PBS or
that's right.
NPR station, but, you know, it's true. And probably most of all is, you know, everybody who's contributed, you know, either beers or information or interviews or whatever, you know, over the past several or all the years, because, you know, if it was just us doing this every week, we wouldn't get very far. But,
that's,
you know,
a fact.
You know, I think that together, along with other, you know, all the other, you know, philosophy and all the other, you know, podcasters and brewers and everybody that's out there posting stuff, you know, the hobby and you know, commercial endeavor of brewing has really improved by magnitudes of improvement, you know, since we've been, and it's just, it's all because the community of brewers likes to share stuff, likes to share successes. And, you know, I think if everybody was proprietary, I don't think that we would have been anywhere near where we are. So cheers to everybody. I'm going to salute with the up the down escalator here. So may everybody have a happy holiday season and a disaster-free and healthy and happy 2024.
Well, we need at least 15 to 20 disasters.
Yes, exactly.
But the rest of you, yeah, we hope you're okay.
Yeah, if you have a disaster, I hope that it's a small one and that you remember to send it to us. And please don't rip your sack.
Don't. That's right. Don't rip your sack. Then you'll get a fever.
A fever for...
And the only thing that'll cure it is more cowbell.
Ding, 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 ding. Okay. Now we're reaching the point of diminishing returns.
That's right.
All right. Thanks,
Time
Steve.
To say goodbye for another year.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, thanks again, as always, to Steve. Thanks to Scott Housel for sending the delicious beers, and many thanks to everybody who sent in their excellent letters. Not a clunker in the bunch. All the best to everybody out there for a healthy and happy 2024. Hey, don't forget about the new discount code for highgravitybrew.com. BB10, BB10 will get you 10% off beer ingredients. Listen to the ad at the beginning of the show again for more details. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com. You just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through a Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.